This is exactly right.
Hi, I'm Erin Welsh.
And I'm Erin Alman Updike, and we're the hosts of This Podcast Will Kill You on Exactly Right.
We're back with our seventh season, which is bigger and better than ever.
Because guess what? We're now a weekly show.
This season, we're tackling everything from long COVID to norovirus, from the supplement industry to IVF, and so, so much more.
New episodes drop every single Tuesday.
Follow This Podcast Will Kill You wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you leaving or are you on your way back home? Either way, we want to be there. Doesn't matter how much baggage you claim. Give us a time and date, terminal and gate. We want to send you off in style. We want to welcome you back home. Tell us all about it. Were you scared or was it fine?
With Karen and Chris.
Welcome to Do You Need a Ride? This is Chris Fairbanks.
And this is Karen Kilgariff.
Hello, my friend Karen.
Hello, Chris.
Hi.
Hi.
Oh, well.
Hey.
Hi.
Oh.
Oh, well.
So you've got something to share. I can feel it.
Oh, I mean, earlier today, I saw what I thought was a wiggling worm. This is kind of a scary Halloween story.
Okay.
And I looked closer and it was a lizard's tail, just a tail wiggling on its own. The lizard.
You have a cat?
I don't have a cat. I'm worried. It's still in my house. It's a pet now, I guess.
The tailless lizard?
It has to be somewhere. If it lost its tail, I think out of fear, what if I step on it? I'm a little paranoid, but it's tiny little tail. What do I do? Leave out cheese? What do I do?
I don't think they like cheese. Well, here's the thing. This happened to me one time. Forgive me, Aunt Jo, who listens to this podcast, but I got really stoned one time and went into the house to get a drink. And when I walked up to the refrigerator, I looked down and there was a very large detached lizard tail with blood on one end wriggling back and forth.
Blood?
And it, yes, because the dog, either the cat, a cat or a dog, caught the lizard and the lizard was like, I'm getting away, right? That's how they do it. But there was like a bloody element to this. So it was very, it looked very much like a Halloween decoration in real life, where it was like, it was out of context. I was having an outside kind of like chill out. And then suddenly we have disembodied lizard tail.
Was it moving?
Yes, it was shaking back and forth like it was trying to get away from me.
Okay, because I was never briefed on I didn't know a disembodied tail moved on its own accord. That shocked me right off the bat. I think initially maybe, but I don't know when this happened, but I think I scared the tail off of the lizard, but it didn't look painful. I picked it up, I looked at it. It looked like it was molted off, but it was still moving.
Yeah, the still moving part is what is very upsetting, because you just know that lizard was there moments ago. Like his hat would be flying in the air if it was a cartoon lizard.
I'm not worried about, you know, if I lay in bed and it crawls on my face. I'm really not scared of a tiny little cute lizard. I'm actually pretty excited for the companionship.
Okay.
I hope it blossoms into more than friends. Weird.
I didn't mean
romantically. I'd like to reword that.
Okay.
I mean roommates more than friends. I want to be roommates with the lizard.
That's less than friends.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Yeah. I don't want to get too close to it. That's all.
What if you wake up?
Mm-hmm.
Head on the pillow sideways. Like, okay.
Is it going to be in my mouth?
Steve Carell movie. Yeah. Where he was sleeping on pancakes.
Yes.
You look up mm-hmm. and you look over and there's this lizard looking back at you, sleeping also on the other pillow. And it's the one from Geico and it has a British accent.
First of all, will probably change my insurance because I hear they're pretty good.
Great.
I'm already sold. And yeah, I can't wait for that to happen. Please let it be so.
I'm glad I ran that impossible scenario by you. So now you're prepared. I mean, this really is spooky season if you wanna talk about that.
Oh, you mean my slightly finished costume, which is a perfect casting of a toilet made out of plaster gauze, the same stuff you'd mend someone's sprained ankle with. I cast my toilet. You have to be very careful. If you imagine casting a balloon, you have to do each hemisphere of the balloon, pull it apart, then attach it later. So I did both sides of the tank. I did the front of the bowl, and it looks exactly like a toilet. I will then, in the bowl, make two leg holes. I have white tights. I got some bunny rabbit slippers that happen to look exactly like clawfoot bathtub feet. I will be a walking toilet. On top, I have foam rubber. I'm using a memory foam pillow that I haven't used because of allergies. I'm going to carve perfect little dangling legs that will kick when I walk. All of it will be attached to my body with belt loops. So I'm going to be a walking toilet with the legs. The fake ones will be attached to an Elvis. We all know that Elvis, I haven't done the research, but I do believe died on a toilet. I'm not going to be morbid. I don't think it's going to be zombie Elvis, although now that I say it out loud, it should be. It should be Elvis.
It should be, yeah.
I was going to be walking Elvis in the moments before, just out of good taste, because, you know, that movie's on the Max right now.
The Max, HBO Max.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, it's going to, the toilet, once I sand it and I spray it with some sort of shellac, it's going to look like a toilet, but here's the thing, it weighs about 3 pounds.
Amazing.
I can't tell you how excited I am about this costume to be coming together.
I think this is the perfect time to introduce our guest.
Yes,
and then allow him to weigh in on exactly how he feels about the toilet.
Yes.
Right?
Everyone, you've seen him on. I recently saw, I was trying to catch up on What We Do in the Shadows, and he was on there, and it was a great, hopefully he remembers that. He probably remembers it.
He remembers.
He's got podcasts. He's a hilarious actor. And we're going to talk about all that. Everyone, put your ears together for John Gabris.
Boo!
Yay!
Yeah, buddy.
Yay. Thank you so much for having me. Chris, I thought for sure you'd hit them with the credit. Sometime segment producer for World's Dumbest, which is how I first met you when I first moved here.
And I
Bob
didn't know.
Bob Castrone got me hired to read you questions and let you just riff on whatever that insane show was.
Yeah. What happened to the pop? You've done those talking head shows.
How my bread was buttered. I started as a PA in my career on Best Week Ever. Then I would eventually be a producer on that show while being a talking head on Guy Code. And it's all the same shit.
Was I you nice or it. Did I snap? Sometimes I...
You were... if any, hopefully none of the other talking heads are listening, but you were our favorite, Chris.
Oh,
thank
you. I was not fishing for that. I thought I was.
Oh, yeah. I would not have. If I didn't have that, I wouldn't have said it.
But I didn't know anything about
it. I mean, it's a world's tallest little person competition over
right,
there.
Right, right. Yeah.
You're the B team captain, okay? And I'm the water boy of the B squad, so I'm aware where I'm at, too.
And you, I remember you gave, you helped immensely with the wording of jokes, because sometimes I get a little too wordy, like with most sentences I've even given today. And you were great at editing my jokes. And then I didn't even know. And then I started to become more familiar with your work. And you were on like Comedy Bang Bang as really great characters. And I'm like, oh, I did not know that this guy probably should have been in my position. We do, you know.
Please, I'd do anything for $200 non-union. That number has gone up, but I won't say it because it's humiliatingly low. It's like 265 at this point. I'll do something. I'll sit in a chair and look at a clip and riff on whatever the fuck you need. It's a try. Yes. It's been a try. Yeah.
It was such an interesting like producer director job because I've been on the other side, like you were. I mean, that was what I did on the days I wasn't on the show, and it's like you. You have to silently laugh at someone's joke with like a smile and a thumbs up because they don't want laughing in the background. And it became something that I thought I was pretty skilled at, just the silent approval, which is usually what
I get. Like keep going. Ooh,
elaborate. You start coming up.
Can we just say that again, but like a little tighter? Can we say freaking instead of fucking? Can we just say that a little tighter? And why don't we take a breath there in case we want to lose the whole second half? Just tell the truth. You want to do, and we love car chases is all they fucking want. Like that's why that's why I was so successful, because I'm just a fat Italian who talks with his hands. So they were like, oh, Geico. And I'm just like, you gotta buy more toilet paper. And people are like, that's not even a punchline, but it's exciting and loud. And the background is colorful. So I'm going to keep this channel on.
It's not easy.
What we want now to use some colorful gesticulation.
Yeah, we want like it's like you might as well shake keys. Like that's like, you know what I mean? It's like that. You're just like you're watching a show full of just heads talking.
Yeah.
So now I'm the most thrilling one because I shout and move and you can see sweat on my brow.
Thank you for watching True TV, where we entertain babies
and produce ourselves. I love that idea that both of you were both producers and in front of the camera.
We would just switch. And then we keep going, like nodding to each other. Yeah. Just like...
Who can be more and more supportive as the job goes on?
But silently.
John, do you know you want to be? Sorry, do you prefer to be called Gabrus?
It doesn't matter to me. Most people do call me Gabrus, but I answer to John. I'm cool with it. Whatever is easier for you, I'm cool with it.
The thing is, I know you by your work, but I have never hung out with you.
No.
Right? Like,
and we have a ton of mutuals, but we've never hung out. We were at a friend's wedding together.
Were we?
But like, we were barely together at that wedding. We just happened. That's how I knew we had mutual friends. It was Pat Walsh's wedding.
You were saying,
yes.
Okay, yeah. So you didn't go together as dates, and Karen has forgotten.
Yeah, I know. Okay. Karen, we met on the apps, and I went with you to a wedding. It was your cousin. I gave a speech. I remember I was the guy with the hands moving.
Refused to talk to him. Just like, yeah, I'll go to this wedding with you, but please, let's not get to know each other. That is.
I did that shit in fifth grade. I went to an ice skating formal with I almost used Margot's last name, but with a young woman named Margot, who I didn't speak to the whole time we were there, and she didn't speak to me. We didn't even see each other, but we were there as a couple.
A lot of pressure on those early. I remember our first, I think it was freshman, like winter formal. My friend David Knowles asked me, who I adored, and I was super excited to go with him, but we were regular friends. And then he came to my house, put a boutonniere on my wrist, and suddenly I had nothing to say to him. And I was so nervous. Like I couldn't eat my weird grill mark chicken dinner. I was just like, it just changed everything. And it was like, no, it's just that same guy. Like, what are you doing?
Dude, yeah. At like 3 or 4 years ago, at the age of 37-ish, I had this realization that I was like, man, probably that girl I was hanging out with like every weekend in sixth grade, and we were just friends and we would dance and we didn't date anyone else. Like, and I liked her, but I was too afraid to say it. I could have said, like, there's so much stuff in my life where I'm like, oh, you know what? I think we liked each other. That was a year of my life and like pressing boners into fucking Arizona jeans. Mm-hmm. So I totally get it. And like, especially if you're like funny as a defense mechanism person, the second you're like, oh, I'm like the funny one around my friends. And then the second it's like, well, we're going to have a title for the brief moment. All of a sudden you're like, well, you can't just be a goofball with Christine, you know, I have to be suave or something.
Yeah. Change the show ends. And suddenly it's like, it's a one-on-one where you're just like, oh, I have nothing to bring to this. If there aren't like six girls standing behind you with their arms crossed that I'm, you know, trying to like make laugh, then there's just I have nothing to say. I don't know what you want.
It's so funny because you described, I had a girlfriend in sixth grade and all of her friends would stand around us in a semicircle with their arms crossed, berating me and asking me why I was scared to kiss her for the first time. And it's because, well, it's because you're all surrounding me and you have us backed against the wall. It's not the most romantic sixth grade. Plus, I'm scared. What if I don't know how to do it? Even after all this pillow practice.
I had a group of girls tell me how to kiss. Like they were my girlfriend's friends. And we were like making out. It was like seventh grade. So we were new to making out. And me and this girl, Jen, were making out all the time. And then her friends had like an intervention with me. It was like, you need to like calm down a little. Like, and yeah. I was like, the harshest, like hearing that, you're like, I was so excited to be French kissing a girl regularly. And then I'm being told by her girlfriends. And then of course your brain, if you're at all neurotic or creative, you're like, you visualize her telling her friends that, this is how this fat fucking pig kisses me. And you're like, no!
He stabs me with his tongue.
Yeah. And I was like, I was the most timid. I was so scared. So like what I was doing was just like inaccurate representation of how I was feeling too. I was just like.
It's because
so humbling.
Yeah, yes. They do all these open mouth notes. It's movie kisses, you know.
Yeah.
It's bad if all you do, if you're raised by television, which I know you are because of the podcast you have that's called Raised by TV. I'm able to do that. I'm able to fit in plug.
You are.
Yeah.
You're like Wikipedia, that you could have organic hyperlinks in your conversation.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
real. Live footnoting of my career. Thank
Amazing.
You.
Yeah.
IMDb link to
while talking,
dumbest.
Sometimes I just say the word asterisk and then I go back to it later. Okay, that was too but yeah, it's we get bad. You pick up bad habits from movie kissing. That's my defense.
Well, and you just don't know, like you truly are new. The idea that you would then be getting notes from people outside of the immediate pair is very upsetting.
Yeah, like it's like what your worst nightmare is. Is
yes,
that you're
it is.
Like it's locker room talk.
Yeah.
not as we know it now, but
yeah.
Seventh grade.
Oh man.
Yeah. Just
she also told everyone I was weird. Cause the first time she gave me a hand job, I didn't come.
That is.
I haven't listened to Do You Need a Ride in a while. Is it this live these days?
Yeah.
I'm sorry if I'm being too raw.
We talk about coming all the time.
Just God. Nonstop.
Yeah.
It's medically dangerous. But we don't care. This made me think of, and I'm not going to say anyone's name, but there was a boy that I absolutely adored from sixth grade to eighth grade.
Say his
and
name.
I can't. Okay. It would be too humiliating. Yeah. My
Trevor
talent.
Noah.
No.
What?
I grew up in South Africa. So then one year, like when we were in our 30s, it was Christmas break and everyone comes back home and goes to the same bar. So you get to see everybody kind of like years after. And we got super shit faced. Me, my sister and her friend, Adrian, we leave the bar. We're walking back to our car. And I see that this boy that my basically junior high super crush is walking down the street toward me shit faced and I'm shit faced. And we walk up to each other and he's like, oh my God. Hey. And I'm like, hi. And then he walks me to the car and we start making out and which was thrilling in the moment. And the way he kissed, it was so strange. It was like a kind of like a lizard tongue, just going doot, doot in and out real fast.
Oh, wow.
And it was, and I finally said, wait, stop doing that. Kiss me like you're in seventh grade. And then we really made out. It was awesome. But it was almost like I the entire time I was like, I was so jealous of all those girls I knew you were making out with in junior high. And that's what you were doing? Like, that is, no one ever stopped you and said, this is weird.
But you brought up seventh grade and he did it old school and he was better at it? Like he
took a note. Like he wasn't, I was my own group of girls with their arms crossed. And I was just like, you don't need to do
you got him out of his head, I bet. Like, yes. I bet you that's what you like. He was overthinking it. And then you said that. And I like the ice is broken. I mean, I know you're already making out, but
yes.
You broke the residual ice there. I feel like it was
basically my way of saying, can we time travel back to when I really liked you, please? Because I feel like this is a huge get back that I'm like, I really won this long game, the serious like 28 year long game. Yeah.
That's awesome. That's like the version of like, if I could go back with what I know now, now you're like confident, funny Karen who's like, kiss me like a fucking seventh grader, you numb nuts. And you're like, yes.
Yeah. And then my sister was like, get in the car, you're so drunk. And then he kind of disappeared and that was it. And that was, you know, that was it.
It is possibly unhealthy how often I play that game. If I could go back knowing what I know now and in dreams and everything and you know, during a pep assembly where I wish I knew how to play piano, everything, just like Groundhog Day. Like, I don't know why that was
mine are all like, I should have done this instead of what I did in that moment. And my life, I wouldn't have like a shudder in the shower monthly. Like, right. And yours is like, I wish I would have gotten up and played surprised everyone with a recital.
Or I wish I was more involved in the arts.
I don't know why it was either, piano or saxophone in front of the whole school. Oh, I didn't do anything. All I did was brood. And not make eye contact.
And skate
silently without making eye contact. I should have been playing sweet, sweet sax in front of the whole school.
Yeah.
Oh, man, it's too late to go back, though.
I also had that as a college student who really leaned heavily on drinking as much beer as I could to get through all of the awkwardness that I thought I was the only one who felt all the time.
Right.
There was someone who I then later met like 3 years later who was like, yeah, you and me or whatever. And then I was like, nah, like to his face, that kind of thing where you're like, if I wasn't so in my head, like you're saying, it's like, and it's nice to say it. It's like, cause we're creative. That's the excuse where it's like, okay, good. That's cause I was creative. Cause it makes me feel crazy. Where it's like, I literally saw the world incorrectly. It feels like looking back, where it's just like, God, I was stupid. God, I was only focusing on like the worst, dumbest things.
Yeah. Oh, man. I know. That shit is brutal when you realize you're like, frequently, I'm childless, don't intend to have any kids, but I frequently flash to me scream crying in my parents' face with a lie within the I know it's a lie and going, how come you don't fucking believe me, like hysterical crying. And I just think about that and I'm like, they knew I was lying in that moment. They Jesus, I'm like saying the most dramatic shit.
Yes.
And I'm like, just always. I think about that all the time and I'm like, you could have just fucking went downstairs and played video games and kept your fucking mouth shut and you wouldn't have absolutely been a prick to your parent, like who sucked. So it's like, it's equal, like we're fair, but it's not like, but I just like, that's the behavior I come to where I'm like, oh my God. Or like pining over who I thought, who everyone agreed was the hottest chick in school, and like ignoring like the busty nerd who I was friends with, who, you know, like now is my absolute type, you know, like, yeah. What the fuck was I doing?
Yeah.
Well, she was wearing overalls covered with paint. It's hard to know.
How was I supposed to know? Yeah. It wasn't until glasses. She took her hair down. And
yeah. Then you'd be like, what in the world? I didn't know she walked in slow motion along to Aha.
I never date a girl with a messy top knot. I'm 16.
Cheerleader or bust. Every time. John, do you know what you're going to be for Halloween?
Yeah, yeah.
Ooh, I was really, the toilet costume really got me, especially because I know you're so artistic. So I was stoked. I was like,
you know what I'm saying, though. You visualize that it would be.
I'm here for it. A plaster toilet that you're walking. Like, I was so on board. And then you said Elvis, which I think is like the crucial part of the costume. And I was already like, this is bananas perfect. I was like, oh, I would have like loose Snickers and Twix floating around in there. But now I'm like, the Elvis thing is even better.
You're
like
right.
Than like chocolate.
I gotta think about, yeah, peanut butter and
but
banana.
But you can have
sandwich.
It in wrappers and people could get that. And then you could also be sharing candy with friends.
Oh, too. That's a great idea. Then it's interactive.
Yeah, the people can reach into the toilet where your genitals, I think, will be.
And that's called takeaway. That's what the audience needs takeaway.
And everyone gets insane allergic reactions to your memory foam pillow.
There's a reason I don't use it.
But I'm going to stand in it.
The best part is they're going to be tiny legs. I'm on purpose making them little legs because I know it'll be funnier.
Little withered Elvis legs.
Yeah, just trying to convince everyone. I want to be so realistic that people leave the party going, did Elvis have little legs? We just were distracted. No one noticed because of his pelvic work.
To draw the eye up and away from his spindly legs.
His little tiny
legs. Yeah, Gabrus, have you given it any thought? What are you going to be?
See, this is, I never really have like a Halloween costume occasion. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I'm not like, it's since mutual friend Scotty stopped having his Halloween party, I kind of don't have like a costume party, that thing I go to. Like, my wife always dresses up, but she like dresses up like from her closet in an insane way. I actually, you know what? I'm going to call bullshit on her. She's not here to defend herself. So perfect. She buys herself insane actual clothes, the, like, you know, expensive dresses that she's like, this is my Halloween dress. I was like, okay, it's a $900 costume, I guess. And no one knows what you're being. It's just beautiful. Okay, fair.
I'm a fancy lady out on the town. It's like, great. You can wear it again sometime.
Hell, I mean, it's, I guess that's better. I always end up slapping together some random like dumb movie reference from like a 40-year-old white guy, like you'd imagine. I've been like Kurt Russell four times in like four different movies.
Ooh, look, sunglasses and a dress shirt and tidy whiteys. Guess the movie.
I was Risky Business twice in college.
Nice. I knew it.
So wait, you just got to walk around in your underwear all night with a big shirt on?
Nice. That was kind of par for the course for me. I was, you know, like a light, I was a light exhibitionist. I mean, was, I guess I am, but still, but it was a direct conflict to my lack of confidence in my body, in my, so I went through.
Yeah, you gotta flaunt it.
I was like, I'm the guy, I'm like, belly, like, shirt off first at the party. It's like, I know I'm fat, say something, you fucking assholes. It's like, okay.
But look at my gorgeous skin tone. You can't argue with this.
And then if only I knew when I was at the age I'm talking about, I was in the best shape I'll ever be in. Like, I'm a little fat 15-year-old. It's like, brother, you're gonna, you have no idea where this train is.
On, and we don't have to skip to this right now, we can keep talking about Halloween, but I just want to say, on the show that you were on with Adam Pally, 101 Places to Party Before You Die, which I am the number max. One fan of.
Oh,
on the Max.
Yeah.
On the Max.
Did you know we were calling it the Max?
Yeah, you mentioned it earlier.
Oh, okay.
Okay, yeah. We're going to get that started. This is it.
It's already taken off. Yes.
But there's a bunch of scenes where you jump into bodies of water and like, and it's like a smash cut from you guys doing shots somewhere to you in a, I was going to say a bikini.
A bikini, yeah.
It's a boy's bikini. Just like doing a swan dive into something. And the first time, and I want you to take this in the correct way, I laughed in that way where it was like, freedom. Like, fuck yes. You're like, because it looks great and it looks super fun. And it's so like, the spirit of that show is so fucking delightful on like a Sunday afternoon to be like, now I'm there. Now I'm doing that. Like, very almost quarantine-y. It would be the dream quarantine show, but we're out now. But it's such a good
show. Hopefully we get another life-threatening disease hits the stateside so that our show, people, our ratings will pop finally.
And maybe
Karen, that is so nice of you to say. I wanted to say that. Thank you so much. That's very kind.
No, it really is. It's and I was watching it first because it's like, I adore Adam Pally and I know he's just always funny. And the two of you together, I was like, well, this guy's really funny. Like, like the combination of the two of you, the fact that you're actually friends, and then the things you're doing, which are actually things you want to be doing. So it's not, it does not feel produced. It doesn't feel in any way fake. Like,
It's the first time in this industry that like imposter syndrome was not activated in me on what
I was doing.
Like I was
me.
Just like, oh, I actually, and I had confidence while we were shooting. I'm like, I'm actually pretty good at flirting funnily with in a comedic way with the server. Like that's what I do every night of the week in LA. And now I get to do it on camera. Like, I'm just like, oh shit. Like I was so like, I felt so in the pocket. Like I was just like, oh, this is what I do well. Cause it wasn't acting. I felt, you know what I mean? Like I was just like, oh, go to the restaurant and eat and drink what you would eat and drink normally with your friend.
Yeah.
And it and fucking
it can be so funny.
There's also an act to, like they have you go and do, is it stunts or how intense are the actual activities they have you
we do?
We do
like we do pretty basic activities normally, but then in a couple episodes we do some shit that like, and we are conveying how much we dislike. We rappel down a waterfall in Maui and both of us hate it and scream the whole time.
It was scary.
And
scary.
Were terrified. Yeah. I was legit terrified. We were like, Adam and I were like nauseous in the ride up. We were like, and we're 40-year-old men who are like, we're executive producers. Can't we just not do this?
Yes.
Like, if fucking, you know, if I'm trying to think of like any actor of any, if Ed Helms didn't want to do something, they wouldn't be like, no, get your ass on the fucking waterfall, Ed Helms. No, he has final say. I'm like, why don't we have fun? And it's like, we do. But at the same time, we're also like this. I have the energy of like, I have like FOMO in such a way that I counter it by like, I want to check off the box of, I want to try and do everything in life.
Yeah.
So I was like, I can't say no, but I was and I don't like riding horses either. And I had to do that too. And that comes across in the episode, anything where like someone's in charge of my weight. I'm like, no, that's not fair to you. You didn't do this. I did this to myself. I'll carry myself around. You don't have to do this. You're just living your life. Beauregard or whatever the fuck your name is.
Also, Chris, just so you know, in that episode, the two women who were teaching these guys how to rappel were the most lithe, tiny. They're just like, here's how you do it. It's like, right, that's how you fucking do it.
Right.
It's easy for you. It's like a leaf going
like
down.
Professional guides. They're like, it's just this. I'm like, do you have any idea the disconnect from me seeing what you're doing to me trying to do that? You're a different species of the creature, you and I.
But it really did feel like when you guys got down to the bottom, like I literally exhaled and I was like, this is fucking great TV, because it wasn't like, it's not like it was, you know, a giant mountain or whatever, but there was like just this short amount of risk that it's just like, are they going to do it? I would quit. Like, I literally was like, I would quit. I wouldn't do it. And
we were
you
like hugging
it
at the bottom. Like, yes. We really did it. Like, we were so proud of each other that we were like, oh, now we understand like why this is going to be in the show. Like we're like, we were like literally like, we overcame something. Like, such like, you know, your life is cush when like a vacation activity was like, I finally overcame something and I did something that's expensive and fun that families do.
Yeah.
But I did it and it was a triumph.
Is this a show that you and Adam developed, like came up with? Or
yeah, we bought the rights to a book called 101 Places to Get Fucked Up Before You Die.
Oh, okay.
And then kind of adapted it to like more about the before you die, like make it for 40-year-olds by 40-year-olds, or you know, for not young people by not young people. And we wanted it to be you know, and like it's a backdoor way to do improv on TV. Like,
right.
You know, improv is so hack to watch when it's like on TV in specifically, but when it's Curb or when it's, you know, fucking Bourdain conversing with a bartender in Marrakesh or whatever, you're like, this fucking rules. Like, so we wanted to, and we love them, the movies, The Trip, like that we like were obsessed with those when they came out. We were like, this is the gig, dude. You eat at these fancy restaurants and talk about whatever you want. And someone makes it into a movie. That's where the fucking Nexus, that's the inkling of how this show came together. We shot a movie together in Italy and had a couple of days off together. And we were just driving around and having so much more fun than the days on the movie on our days off. We were like, you know, when you're fucked up with your friends and you go, this is the show. Like, we did that and somehow completed that idea. Like, and we were like, dude, this is the show. It's just you and I fucked up out of our minds. That's trying to great. Get prosciutto in Tuscany or whatever.
Is The Trip the Steve Coogan thing?
Yeah.
Oh, it's the best.
Good. Those guys are so fucking funny.
There's this part too, and not to be like super nerdy or whatever, but this was one of those things where like I'm always searching for a show to hook into, and it's usually a unscripted. Swedish procedural.
Oh. Okay. I thought I had a guess there. That's, by the way, we should talk, because the amount of Danish and Nordic fucking crime thriller series I've watched. Have you watched Das Chestnutman or whatever, the Chestnut Man?
I started it and it seemed really dark, and I was like, am I in a okay headspace to watch this? Because it seemed like children were killed.
Yeah, it's fucked up.
Yeah. I didn't know.
But I'm in that wheelhouse too. I love that shit. I love like a brooding person in a parka.
I love watching people go into snow, but I don't have to be cold. Like that is, and then do some crimes. But the thing I was going to say about watching you guys is all those things you just said, where it's true, it's real. So you guys know how to be on camera and still be real and be funny. Like, so the riffing is really excellent and appreciated, because it is so hard. Like, you know, I worked on the production side of TV a lot, like you guys. And that thing of trying to do field pieces and man on the street, everybody thinks it's like easy and you just go out. It's so fucking hard to get people to act normal yourself, to have it be like in that pocket. But the other thing I observed is you guys have fucking immaculate manners. So you are modeling behavior for like young partying people that, so it's like, be friends with your bartender. They'll fucking hip you to what's good. Ask people what they think. Say hi to the regular that's sitting at the end. Like, there's all these things where I'm like, this is more than a travel show.
it's a behavioral lesson.
It is. It's like, this is how you have the most fun. Don't be a dick.
Yeah.
Invite other people into your party. Drink as many fucking of the signature cocktails as you can. Like, it's just fun. It feels
I've been
fun.
An obnoxious drunk my whole life and only been thrown out of a place like once or twice. And right. It was like private functions, not the bar. Like, cause I was a bartender. I was a server. I was a bouncer. So I did all that shit. So I don't want to fucking make anybody's day harder. I've eaten meals with fucking hair in it. I've eaten a meal that was cold and not what I ordered without saying a fucking word. Mm-hmm. I've drank drinks I'm allergic to out of pride. But yeah. I just love, and the other thing was, it was post pandemic. So I had been like thinking a lot about all my friends that I met, like bartending and serving and like in that industry, and how they were like treated like the nurse, and my family's all nurses and teachers. So they fucking put their time in. But like, I was thinking about the waiters who didn't even get like pots banged for them and shit.
Right.
Yes.
Short order cooks are getting like risking their life so that I can get my fucking truffle fries delivered or whatever. You know what I mean? So it's like, and during that, Adam and I were talking a lot because we were pitching it. And then once it sold, we actually sold it in February 2020, the pitch. And they were like, all right, timing. We'll shoot it in like April. And then we just pushed it like 3 months, six times. Yeah. But that whole time we were like, dude, our show. And because also we couldn't go to crowded places due to Warner Brothers like COVID regulations. So when we were shooting the pilot, it's like, dude, we should be talking to the servers and bartenders and not like the drink expert guy. Let's talk to whoever the guy's the person is doing the shift. And that ended up being like the best part of the show for me was talking eventually people don't want to hear from two like successful 40-year-old white straight guys all the time, believe it or not. We're on vacation. Eventually people are going to be like, we fucking hate these guys. They're just like, oh man, I have diarrhea again. They're like, what the fuck? So getting to talk to like servers and bartenders in all these different cities and shit like that really like open the show up. So I appreciate you noticing that. And then for us, it's like showcasing the bartender is like, if people start going to La Factoria and tip the shit out of Carlos, I'm honored. Like,
yes.
That makes me very happy. Yeah.
Yes. No, it's great.
I can't wait to watch. I'm not a liar. I'm just going to say that right now. Right when we're done, I'm going to watch at least three episodes.
I'm not a person who thinks you should have watched it by now, so don't worry. Like, right. I don't give a fuck.
We're both
like, I
on
appreciate
the same
that
page.
You are gonna watch it, but if you never do, That's fine.
Why don't you believe me, John?
I totally believe you. You did it, like, because I can sniff out. I've sniffed out, like, I had to do a bunch of press for this job. I sniffed out, like, so many liars. Totally. And I just, like, I'm not going to say, I'm like, well, thanks for having me on, you fucking that, you know? I'm just like, this is so cool. So you guys are, like, partying. It's like, you got a clip. I know you can. You didn't watch it.
Just watch it. It's 5 minutes.
All right. John Grabus, Adam Paul. We're talking to him tonight. It's like, thank you.
My nephew came to visit me for the weekend and I had just watched the first episode. And so he and I were hanging out and then I'm like, can I just make you watch a TV show real quick? And we binged the rest of the season. Like because I was like, he was young. He's like 30 basically. And a young single guy out on his own or whatever, where I was just like, I want you to see this. I want you to know, like, how, like, this is a great way to be funny. This is a great way to hang out. Like, this is a great way to be, like, the idea that you guys call your family. It's just like this shit. I was, every time you guys did something like that, I was like, fucking yes, A+. Like, and I didn't realize you guys were the EPs. I didn't realize you guys had so much. I was like, whoever's producing this is a fucking badass. They know what they're doing.
Whoever's, like, making them do these stunts against their will is a genius.
It's great.
We had a hell of a showrunner and a great producing team, not only on, like, the front end of, like, finding cool spots for us to go to and heeding our feedback and our ideas of, like, I want to make Adam play rugby with me in Hawaii or whatever. So it was cool to get to do a lot of that shit. But, like, our team is just so good. And, like, they know, they're like, give them another, like, 25 minutes. They're going to find, like, they're just fucking getting, you know, like, they're like, let the three drinks hit them. Then they'll be fucking speaking gibberish. But right now we just got to, oh, you guys want to get anything else?
Like, so need another round?
They're like experts at keeping, they're like, and one of my best friends, Adam's other friends, we started in comedy together, is the producer, like the guy behind the scenes. Yeah. This is my buddy, Justin Tyler. And he's an ex-server and ex and current alcoholic. So, like, all of, like, us, like, and we were drinking together for like 20 years. So it's like that, having that guy as, like, your producer is like, give us another fucking drink, or like it, the vibes are really fun. I mean, you would imagine, like, to take this job on the crew, it's like not a fun, it's a hard job. And you have to be around fun and not having
and not
it
participate.
Like, so every night is like, the crew is like, we're ready to get ripped. And me and Adam are like, we're good for a couple. And then it's like, I'm absolutely hungover the next day while I got to go fucking go to brunch and eat a French onion soup omelet or some shit.
My favorite. I'm so jealous of just you talking about this stuff. And Karen, she's not blowing smoke because she was telling me about this show.
She's in too deep. If she's just being nice, she's fucking going for it. And that's
I am the phoniest of all the Hollywood phonies.
You just like, but you were like guessing all this in crazy, like, fucking
right? You eat a sandwich. You eat a sandwich in New Orleans, right? Didn't you? And also, I guess because I'm one of those people that kind of hates everything, and that I'm from the 90s. So it's like, that used to be my personality, like 1,000%, where I'm just like, I'm the one that says no to the thing you love or whatever. And so kind of, it sucks, trying to lose that, like, that isn't cool. Like, it's over pavement, get away, Kurt Cobain, whatever. And kind of going into like the improvish, you know, internet based 2000s that we're in, which is so much better. It's like stand-up versus improv, where like stand-ups are controlling and it has to be like, I get the joke and you don't get the joke or whatever. And the first improv class I took, I was like, oh fuck, this is what we're supposed to be
doing. They have no jokes and they all think they're funny. This is amazing. And take this from someone who dedicated 20 years of their life to an insane fucking art form that and made almost 10 grand in those 20 years doing it.
Hey.
I'm the five figure. I'm one of the few. I'm probably including, because I did Wild and Out. So I actually have kind of like one of the higher improv salaries. I mean, just behind like Colin Mockery, probably.
That good improv money.
That non-union improv, baby. No residuals. You didn't spend any time writing this bullshit down.
So wait, is that?
No, go ahead, Karen.
I was just going to ask, you got Is UCB New York where you
That's
got
what
start?
I was going to ask.
Hey.
I'm
Excellent.
Not kidding. I'm not yeah. kidding.
I got started in my early 20s in New York City at UCB New York. I'm from Long Island. So when I was home for a summer from college, I was doing short form and sketch comedy and making videos at school with friends. And I was like, I came home, like Googled improv. Yahooed improv, you know,
yeah, yeah.
1999 or no, this would
you
be like 2000.
Yeah,
I meta crawlered. to Alta Vista in it was so it was like 2003. I think I took my first class the summer. I was a beach lifeguard bartender, and then like one night a week in flip flops and board shorts. And this is another moment in your life when you're like a 21 year old beach bum who happens to be like the funniest kid at lifeguarding. And then you're taking like taking that insane confidence on the train to New York City to like artists doing art. And you are like, I'm the school clown, you know, yeah. like, and like, I just showed up super tan and like flip flops yeah. and everybody was like, oh, this fun. And like in hindsight, like I'm just imagining after teaching, you know, 70 level one classes, I'm like, oh my God, if I had a kid like myself, I'd yeah. be like, dude, you have so much, your life is going to be so much worse for you too.
But and yeah, then you find out that everyone you're doing improv with is also a really good lifeguard. Where they yeah, come I know from.
That. That was always like how I maintained my confidence was like, I was always either like a lifeguard or a power lifter or playing rugby in New York City. And a comedian. So I was always like the strongest, like jockiest improv guy and always the funniest guy on the rugby team. Never really excelling in the right category at the right time.
Yeah,
but it was enough for the ego boost that I'd be like, I love playing rugby. They all think I'm hilarious. I love doing comedy. They all think I'm big and strong. It's
like, did you ever
someday that'll flip, but yeah. it never happened. Yeah.
Work-life balance.
With your rugby, did you ever go to Missoula, my hometown, to play Maggot Fest?
No, but that is like legendary. Everyone talks about Maggot. I met dudes in Maui outside that biker bar from the episode. Chris, you'll get that eventually.
God damn it. Yeah.
Never. I always got to do my research.
But there were just these bikers who were like, dude, you played with the Maui rugby team, right? And I was like, yeah. It's like, you got to come to Maggot Fest, man. This guy was like 60 with like a bald head with tattoos on his head. And I was like, yeah, man, probably going to skip this one.
Yeah, it was my first because I would go. I did T-shirts every year for Maggot Fest. I worked at a screen printing shop. And so I was allowed to go. And it was my first time. You know, as a young adult realizing, oh, I totally get along with big, tough alpha male dudes. maybe I secretly am one. I was just born with little legs.
Like Elvis.
Yeah, I got a lot of little time, but you got to see my pelvis work. And that's how I got into Maggot Fest, all pelvic. But yeah, it's just insane partying and people in tents and enjoyable fights and like where guys punch each other and then they hug and I'm like, oh, that this is 100% healthy, even though I just watched a guy punch someone. It was
yeah, rugby players, we like to say soccer is a gentleman's sport played by hooligans and rugby is a hooligan sport played by gentlemen.
There's
like an unspoken code, like you're allowed to get in fights on the pitch and like, you know, shit can happen like that, stepping on each other and like drop, but afterwards the home team hosts the other team for a drink up and you have to like drink together. So it's like, yeah, it's a really, obviously you see how I found the sport, but like that vibe was always like cool. And like, I'm just jumping out, projecting here, Chris, but like from like extreme sports people, you know, street sports people, they are always like, they do a thing that they love that is so obviously going to hurt them at some point.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think there's a kinship amongst like the skater, snowboarder world and like the rugby playing world. Cause it's like, I love this fucking thing that we owe, like, you know, frequently substances are involved during or after. And it's like that. I think there's the kinship there. Cause I grew up skating on Long Island. So like the vibes are like, dude, he fucking wrecked on that deck. And it's like, that was sick. And you're like limping for a day and you're like proud of it. And that was me with like I have scars in my temple from where a cleat scraped me, and I like still talk about it, and it happened 18 years ago.
Yeah, I know that. I swear to you, I'm not making it. When I was bonding with these older rugby men, it was all about I've broken this ankle twice and this foot once, and this I separated this shoulder, and then they're like skateboarding, and I'm like, yeah, that's.
And then they're like, dude, this guy's fucking hard. He should be the hooker, man. Yo, Fairbanks, wear this jersey, dude. Like,
but it's a double extra large. No, that's just one of our larges.
The coolest thing about the weirdest thing about rugby too, especially in America, is not enough people play it to like really field teams like that you want. And also no one really has like experience in it. And people get hurt, especially in men's league or adults league. You don't last as long.
Yeah.
So bodies matter. So people are down to be like, hey, I got this fucking skateboard dude. He's got little legs like Elvis, you know, traditionally has, but he's tough as nails and he's down the clown. Everyone's like, sign him up. And everyone would like on your team would like weirdly respect you, even though like that is not like how you think the alpha system works.
Yeah,
but everyone's
yeah.
just like, we got another body, throw it in the war. Yep, you know, yep. It's just like it's like a draft. We're happy to have whoever. So the and like, you know, they'll be like, hey, I've played with like a Mormon and Polynesian team from Utah in a tournament where I was like, hey, can I get a run in with you guys? They're like, yeah, what do you play? I'm like, prop, but I'm out of shape. They're like, great, we'll pull you in at the second half. And like playing with like a strange team made up of like Mormons and fucking Polynesian Mormons, like people who moved to Utah from from the South Pacific.
Wow.
It was fucking rad as hell. And then also you realize like mission work and like, oh, this is kind of weird. And I don't fully understand religion and colonies and all that shit. But
they're all playing rugby in white button up shirts. They all ride bikes.
their name tags causing blood to come out of their pecs.
I have to tell you guys, actually, I had two Mormons ring my doorbell a couple weeks ago. It was probably 3 weeks ago. And it was like at 8 o'clock at night. So it was pitch black outside and the doorbell rings and I'm like, this is scary, but let's see what happens. And I open the door and it's two Mormons and they, I think, had met the guy that owned the house before I did. So they were asking for him like we need to talk to him. He's the guy that talks to us. And I was just like, no. And then I almost said, I was about to shut the door and I almost said, don't do this at night. Don't do this. Like once the sun goes down, it's bad for you. It's bad for me. Like,
women aren't going to answer the door. I mean, people aren't going to answer the door, but like, you know, my wife will call me and she'll be like, someone's knocking on the door. I'm not home. Like, who is it? She's like, I'm not looking. Then they'll know I'm home.
Yes,
I'm
exactly. Like, then the little thing opens, the light goes through.
Oh,
just weird. I was like, why? I thought they only could do it during sun up. Like,
by do service. Weird. Isn't it called doing service?
On a mission.
Because Mormons are sort of anti-vampires, right? They have to be home before dark. And like Coca-Cola is their garlic or like caffeine.
Yeah. They're like, wait, what's in this? What's in this?
Oh, no, we're going to multiply. Well, sorry, that's gremlins. I was confused, though.
And BB's kids. They don't die, they multiply.
Oh, right.
Why do I know that? Because I have like 40 phrases burned in my brain that if I hear half of it, I have to say the other half, and I don't know why. And you said multiply. I'm like, we don't die, we multiply. Yeah. Why?
It has to be said.
Yeah,
broken. And if not, I'll get off with you, and then I'll go out to my wife and be like, we don't die, we multiply. And be like, remember Bebe's kids? And she's like, what is this from? I'm like, help me get it out of my system.
Do something. Please do something.
React. Funny? Bad? Tell me.
Get mad. Be happy. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. I need a blink. Blink if it's okay.
John Gabrus, is there anything you want to talk about before we say goodbye? Anything you want to plug or like? Anything?
I just weigh in on like insane global politics. I'm like, well, let's stay the fuck out of Crimea. And everyone's like, what?
I don't. That was specific.
So uninformed. He moved his hands a lot, so I believe him. No, I got nothing. I got some podcasts. You can find them wherever you get podcasts, High and Mighty and Action Boys, and 101 Places to Party Before You Die, now on the Max.
If you're a Dynar
reader, you know what the Max is.
Yeah,
it's not It's not where the Bayside kids hang out. Okay.
It's different.
See, that's another, it's like in my head the whole time the Max is like, that's the name of the, you know, you're like, you don't have to tell them that. You're just a
make
guest
the
on
reference.
The
and you're I not going to get credit for the reference.
Say it. Say it.
No, I was going to say, wait, isn't that the Peach Pit? But then I realize I have the shows confused. Of course it was the Max.
Of course.
John, you're hilarious.
You're the best.
This was a blast. You guys rule. I'm such fans. So this rolls. This was fun.
Same,
for me.
Same. That went by. That it honestly felt like 5 minutes. I'm so excited. That was so easy.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have to have you back when we're inevitably in a car and we'll give you a ride to something.
Yes.
You've been listening to Do You Need a Ride? DYN.
AR.
This has been an Exactly Right production.
Produced by Annalise Nelson.
Mixed by John Bradley.
Our talent booker is Patrick Kottner.
Theme song by Karen Kilgariff.
Artwork by Chris Fairbanks. Follow the show on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Dynar Podcast. That's DYNAR Podcast.
For more information, go to exactlyrightmedia.com.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Honk, honk.
Outro.
Yeah, we used to do the honk in the car, John. That's why I have to say it.
Follow Do You Need a Ride on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen so you never miss an episode.
If you like what you hear, rate and review the show.
And visit the exactlyrightstore.com to purchase Do You Need a Ride merch.